Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
Welcome to the special edition of Latin Waves. On this show, we're going to have a Port Moody mayor's debate for the October 20th election. We'll have an incumbent mayor, Mike Clay, first, followed by Rob Vargamoff. So stay tuned, and don't forget to vote on October 20th. I have Mike Clay on the line. Mike Clay is running for re-election as mayor in October. He sat on council for 13 years and has been mayor since 2011. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm very good. Now,
good.
This election is important because we're seeing rapid pressure from developers, which is a good problem to have. So what is your philosophy for the future of Port Moody? What's your vision for the city?
Well, I think it's important to distinguish between we're getting a lot of applications for development, but we don't have a lot of development going on. So, in fact, we've been growing very slowly since I was elected mayor in 2011. We've had very little growth, and it's been measured against, you know, waiting for the Evergreen Line to come in and waiting for some of the other pieces to come into play. So I think it's important now that we have the Evergreen Line that we're building and we're, you know, approving projects that are taking advantage of transit and allowing people to possibly come here and live sort of a car-free lifestyle or a minimal car lifestyle and use that transit for their daily commutes and such, and also to bring the amenities that we're looking for in the city. So we've been really successful of late of getting some rental housing and some below-market rentals, and we're looking to get seniors housing and more affordable rental housing and even affordable market housing if we can, but also bringing in, you know, a mix of different styles of housing. So that once we've got that on the table, which we've had a lot of conversation about, we're also looking at attracting more jobs and more business to Port Moody because we see that a big opportunity for people to divest out of the downtown hub. And because we do have transit here, not only can it take people to work, but it can bring people from other places to work here and to shop here and to do business here. So we're really looking to diversify our tax base that way to bring in more jobs into the economy. And we were a traditional heavy industry town, and now we're looking at the new sort of high-tech industries and what we can do to lever to get them here. So it's been a big change for us, and it's a lot of work, but that's sort of my vision, is that we have some really good residential development coming in to complement some really substantial economic growth and business development in the city.
Your opponent, who's running against you, he's suggesting that city council currently and yourself are kind of building on top of our official community plan. You're like laying out the red carpet for developers, and you're not really thinking about the community plan. How would you respond to that?
Well, it's interesting. I guess when you're running, you need to try to make a difference if you're going to unseat people that are here doing the job. So you're going to try to contrast what you're saying. So he wants to have a community where there's no growth and nothing new and nothing exciting going on. I guess that's not the Port Moody that I envision. We're doing a lot of really good things here. Our community's gotten a lot younger. We have a lot of young families here, and they've been attracted here to the Newport Village and Soderbrook and Klahani. The exact type of development that has brought them here is what has made this city, you know, a pretty vibrant and exciting place. We're moving away from single-family homes on large lots and moving into these village and sort of the more urban concept, bringing things like restaurants and breweries and all the other things. And, you know, how we balance that off with the lifestyle choices that they're making if they don't want to own a car, if they want to use transit. So, again, as I said, we're lucky to have a huge, $1.4 billion transit investment, and we need to build around that. Our OCP itself, we've had very little, people are saying we're doing all these amendments to our OCP. We've had very little amendments to our OCP. And when we have, they've been things like to bring in more rental housing. So we've made a minor adjustment on a height or a density, but it's been to bring in the rental housing, which is also a goal of our OCP. And we knew that to get those things that we had to do those negotiations. So we've been really successful in bringing that style of housing and the submarket rentals in particular into Port Moody. And that's what you do. The OCP is a living plan. Our city is a living place. So we're always looking at how do we move forward to the next thing. But, you know, now we're hearing these allegations of where, you know, we've already surpassed our population target. Well, we're at 34,000. Our population target is 50,000 by 2040. That's a long way away, but it's also, we're nowhere near being on pace for that sort of growth. So we're planning for the future. And sometimes when you plan for the future, if people assume that any of that's going to happen in a day, like we're planning for 30 years and looking out that far gives us a chance to really build the great city that we want. And not have anything, you know, take us by surprise. But also you have to be flexible for when things change.
With growth comes many headaches, and I'm a resident of Port Moody, and I was, you're quite right, I was happy to see the SkyTrain coming through here. But traffic is still a major issue. Congestion's an issue for people coming in and out of the city. Is there any other strategies for dealing with this kind of congestion, especially around rush hour time?
Well, and the congestion has gotten worse in the last 7 years when our growth has been, zero to less than zero. So this isn't about Port Moody growing and putting more cars on the road. This is about the region growing. So we're growing as a region. The whole Metro Vancouver area is going to add another million people. And how do we accommodate that? So, you know, one is getting people off the car and onto transit and getting them, you know, able to make those choices. So you build the housing near transit that attracts those people that are going to use the transit and live here. And they won't have a big car vehicle impact. The other thing is getting those jobs here. And so people don't have to pile on a highway or onto a train and go downtown every day. Let's get those jobs here and let's keep them working here. So we've been really successful. We brought probably over 1,000 jobs into Port Moody in the last couple of years. And that's what we want to keep doing. And we've got some of these developments are, again, our big component of them is going to be job growth. And then the other one is looking at the transportation planning from the regional model, working with TransLink and the resources that they have as the regional, you know, transportation agency, and saying, you know, how are we going to move these people around regionally, where one city like Port Moody, and certainly New West has gone through this, where you're a commuter choke point and you're taking the burden of traffic from other municipalities. So we need to work with our neighbors and with TransLink and with the provincial government to say, hey, there's probably a better way to do this, guys. Let's figure this out. So we looked at some alternatives a couple of years ago, putting a traffic circle at St. John's and Ioco, and people basically laughed. I said, oh, you'd never put a traffic circle there. It's like, those are things that need serious consideration by engineers and people that can do traffic modeling and see what does that do. And at the same time, you know, we don't want to build our way out. We don't want to turn St. John Street into a 6 or an 8 lane highway. We want to keep it, the suburban sort of street where our businesses are thriving, where our neighborhoods are alive and people can cross the street safely. And so you need to always balance that, and you can't just look at it from one perspective. There's multiple perspectives that need to be considered all the time.
Another issue is independent stores that are literally institutions in our community, like the Share Store in St. John's. They're feeling the pressure of increased rents because of this development and more business coming. Rents are seeming to go up. Is there any plan by the city to address stores that might not exist in a few years if rents keep increasing?
Well, we have no way to control what a private landowner charges somebody to rent their property. That's the market, and that's what it does. So one side effect of being a very successful and popular place to live is that the prices rise. And we know that our housing prices are already some of the highest, certainly in the Tri-Cities we are the highest, and some of the highest in the region. And it's because it's a very desirable place to be. So, you know, what we need to do is figure out how do we make sure that we have enough supply and the right type of supply in these developments so that the small independent stores and such are able to stay here. So we've always stayed away from doing any big box. We have no Walmart or Costco or anything like that here. We have small stores. Even our grocery stores or IGA and Thrifties are on a small scale. So what you do through your land use and your zoning and your built form is what controls, you know, who's going to be here and what type of businesses you're going to have. And then whether they're able to thrive, even if their rents went up, if you have lots of people around that are buying your goods and making you successful, then you're able to thrive. So I think the breweries and Rocky Point Ice Cream and you know, Cafe Devano and some of the people in Newport Village, they would tell you that maybe they would want their rents to be lower, but they'd also tell you that they're doing very well because of this new, young, sort of vibrant demographic we have in the city that spends money locally. The people here love to support their local retailers, and we do a lot of movement to try to increase their business. So rather than trying to artificially mess with their rent or do things like that, it's like, let's just make sure they're successful by making sure their business has lots of customers and that they're easy to get to and that they have the right amount of parking and that they have, you know, that they have the right bylaws and everything else that allows them to flourish as a business. So again, multifaceted issues about how you support local business. You know, we can't just go in and say, well, your rent should be lower, because, you know, unfortunately, when cities get successful, everybody wants to be here. So we need to make sure that we're protecting that sort of demographically and through what we do zoning and land use wise. And then that will stay a thing. If you have a real shortage of commercial or light industrial property, then those rates are going to skyrocket because they're just not available. So making sure you've got the right blend is what's going to keep the rates reasonable and then keep the businesses vibrant.
When I moved to Port Moody, there was one skyscraper. Now there's like 12. And there's been a new proposal for Andre's Wine to put some skyscrapers up there. I'm not completely against it, but has that project been approved, or what's your theory about having different zoning around the city? Because traditionally, the towers have only been allowed in like the Newport Village area. Do you support those kind of developments like the Andres Wine proposal?
There is no official Andres Wine proposal at this point. They've been working in a development stage with our staff, and they have some challenges around their site that they need to work out. And when that comes forward, the advantages that they have is that they're on the far west end of town, so they don't put any cars on the street that would have to choke through. Our big choke point is Dewdney, Ioco, and St. John's area, where the traffic really funnels up. But, you know, they're outside of that area, so they have an opportunity. And they have an opportunity, again, if they bring enough amenities and enough mix of jobs and people, frankly, if somebody brings a development that brings more jobs than it brings residential spaces, then that's a net negative for the city, or it should be, as far as sort of traffic flow goes. So you're always having to look at those and balance those. I think the Moody Center transit area is the more key area, where we have right now the landowners down there working with the city on a whole neighborhood plan, and it's going to be a comprehensive plan that addresses seniors housing, affordable rentals, commercial office, retail space, housing, you know, different housing mixes. And that one's, you know, there will probably be some taller buildings down there. I can't say for sure how tall they would be. In our OCP, we've said maximum of 26 stories. But that's, again, building on top of a SkyTrain station where you've got this over $1 billion investment and an amenity in a place where people want to live. So you have to make sure that you're working to make those the best they can be, and not just either dismissing them or accepting them out of hand, but, you know, making sure that you get a great development for the city. So the Andres one is you know, sort of pre-application stage. We've seen their concepts and they sound very exciting. But, you know, that all has to work out. And then when you see whatever the final product comes to be, then as everything else, it has to go through the community and get approval. So that's a long way away for them, I think. But I know they've had some great ideas about how they can address some of the wants and desires of the community.
Now, for me, I'm kind of happy when I see developments that are just on big vacant lots where there's nothing there. Where I get a little irritated is when proposals come for like green spaces or treed areas to forge through our beautiful green spaces that make Port Moody so great. How are your feelings about proposals? I know there was some controversy with Hunter. The new councillor was against a proposal to clear a whole bunch of green space. Where do you stand on park space and those kinds of development proposals?
Well, since I've been on council, we've been increasing our green space. We've been acquiring properties. We've been improving some of the parks. And, you know, we're looking at other areas. My question or issue with parks is we have a lot of passive park space. So we have a lot of places where you can go walk on the trail with your dog. But those aren't active park spaces. They're not accessible to people with accessibility issues. They're not great places for young kids. They're not playgrounds. They're not developed. They're just, you know, green spaces, which, frankly, from my back door, I think I could walk to Prince George without encountering another human being. So we have a lot of that space. But, you know, do we have active park space that people need to use? Now, Hunter Madsen's issue, there was no development proposed in his green space. There was a longstanding OCP requirement that if there's development on Ioco, that they look at enabling the David Avenue completion, which has been there for about 30 years as well, that they would have to look at using that to access their site. Now, I personally, I'm not in favor of any development on the Ioco site right now, so that's a dead issue for me. There's no need for a road because there's no need for development. But that will come probably one day, long, long after I'm gone. But, you know, I think that that's something that they can deal with at that time. So for right now, you know, we've been adding park space and we've been redeveloping the space that we have to address the new demographics that we have. And then we're making the new developments that come in have, you know, amenities on site. So like the canoe club over at Klahani was an on-site amenity space that's pretty big and, you know, really services, allows people not even to have to leave their property. So they have park space, they have tennis courts, they have a pool, they have a shared amenity building right on their property. So they don't have to, you know, get out of their pajamas if they don't want to. So, you know, that's sort of the modern way of doing these developments where people can stay very close to their home and not have to get in a car or anything to go to a park. Burt Flynn Park, which is the area that you're referring to, most of the people up there drive to get there. And that's not great. You know, if we could have park space where people could walk to or ride their bikes to, it would be a lot better. So I think it's about having the right mix of parks in the right places around town and making sure that, you know, we don't concentrate all of our efforts in one place like Rocky Point, but, you know, that you need places like West Hill, Glen Eyre, College Park, need park space there as well so that people can stay close to home.
Now, one issue I've heard come up from different councillors and potential councillors is affordability. Port Moody is becoming, like you said, very successful, and it's a very affluent place, but not everybody here is affluent and they need places to live. Is there any creative strategies on your plate that can help middle-income or low-income people live in Port Moody, maybe development credits or some way to create some affordable housing here?
Well, again, we've approved in the last 6 months over 500 rental units, which purpose-built rentals, which is the first in over three decades, and 105 units of below-market income-based rental housing. So what you pay in rent is based on what you make as income. We've had partnerships that we've helped put together with the CMHC in the Strand building where people, again, it's based on their income, and they had a innovative sort of down payment program. We've got the Panache building coming in, which is they're doing a rent-to-own program. So the first two years somebody can rent, well, they would sign an agreement to purchase, and the first 2 years of their rent would then, if they did execute at the end of the 2 years, would go to be their down payment. So, you know, there's lots of options out there and lots of things we are doing, and we will continue doing those. And those opportunities come and go depending on when the markets are very hot and when they're not as hot. So, you know, you go back a few years when we were trying to entice developers here by giving them, you know, maybe incentives. Now we're basically making developers pay for the luxury of being here. So those markets go up and down, and you have to make sure that you know where you are in the market and what you can derive to help people come here. And then what are you doing, you know, to control a market? That's not really anything in our control. I know the province is doing a number of things with speculation taxes and empty home taxes and such that, you know, if those apply in Port Moody, they may or may not have an effect on that. But I think the other thing is just making sure you're building the type of housing that we need. So, you know, not everybody wants to live in a single family home or a one bedroom condo. We need to make sure that we have everything in between that. So we're doing things like the Marcon George development in Moody Center right now, which is bringing a lot of townhomes into the center of Port Moody, and also creating a nice park space and daylighting a creek. So it really encompasses a lot of what we want to do generally as a community. And I think any time you can make sure you have the type of housing people need, the size, you know, so that it's appropriate, so that people aren't underhoused or overhoused. And then the affordability issues, we were working on the lower end of the income scale, trying to make sure that those people can actually afford to stay here. So we've been successful at it, and we'll keep doing it, and it's important, and there's a lot of incentives out there with the province and the feds right now as well. So we tap into that, and we're doing very well.
Fabulous. Any councillor endorsements? Would you be bold enough to endorse any other council candidates?
Oh, people that are running for council?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, I'm not endorsing any on the team that are running against me, so you know, I'm more than happy to continue with Councillors Roy, Dilworth, Junker, and Lottie on the council. And I found of the new candidates, obviously, I've known Sterling Ward for a long time. He's very active in the arts community. I think he'd probably be a great member of council. And relative newcomer is James Robertson, who I found to be really, really energetic about economic growth and business growth and really looking at things, you know, from that side of view, which is not, you know, doesn't seem to be the prevailing sort of bent on council, where we do talk a lot usually about parks and recreation and housing, where he's really geared up on the business side. So I'm excited by that. And I think there's some other good candidates out there that I don't know that well, but you know, it's pretty clear in this election that we have one group of people that's running against myself and the existing council, because they don't think that they don't agree with what we've been doing. So obviously I'm not endorsing any of them. So it comes down to a pretty small number on the other side as well. It seems to be about a 50-50 split.
Fabulous. Thanks for your time. And if anyone wants to get involved or learn more, how can they learn more about your campaign?
Yeah, of course, on the website, mikeclay.ca. I think I'm the only councillor mayor in the Tri-Cities and just about anywhere that I maintain my website, and I have since I was first elected 13 years ago. So mikeclay.ca, and then, of course, Facebook page and things like that, Twitter. I'm on just about everything, and people can track me down pretty easy.
Well, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with me, and good luck.
Great, thank you.
And now for the second part of our show with Rob Vagramov. Just a reminder that you're listening to Latin Waves. For more information about our show, go to www.latinwavesmedia.com. Online, I have Rob Vagramov. Rob Vagramov was elected to Port Moody City Council and has been on council for 4 years. And now he's decided to make the jump to run for mayor. Hey, welcome to the show, Rob.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can you tell me what your vision is for Port Moody and what has motivated you to take on the big task of trying to unseat an incumbent mayor?
Yeah, absolutely. I was really excited to get involved in local government. I guess that's the weird part of me coming out there. And for the last 4 years, I've been on city council, seeing a lot of change come through towards Port Moody and a lot of a lot of plans heading our way. What I ended up coming up on was sort of a really growing concern with the direction that we're being led as far as growth and development is concerned. You know, there's not a lot of growth has happened in Port Moody in the last few years, but in the last term, we've started to look at the future, and we've started to sort of ask ourselves the question of what do we want Port Moody to look like in 2040 and 2041. The answer from the current leadership is something that I cannot accept, which is a vision of overbuilding. And if you add up the population estimates from the three projects that were added to the official community plan this term, again, in between elections, then we can see that in addition to what has already been greenlit, we're actually exceeding the agreed-upon growth targets for 2041, which was an already very aggressive growth target of 50%, which would bring us to about 50,000 people by 2041. And that really was the catalyst for me to get involved after I've seen time and time again sort of big movements come to City Hall with hundreds or in one case thousands of petition signatures to push back against just some aspects of this these plans for overdevelopment, and I watch them be ignored. And so that's really what pushed me to call for a change of leadership at City Hall.
You've indicated that you don't like the direction of City Hall and these development permits or applications that are coming in. What is your vision? How would you do things differently? What does the future of Port Moody look like if you were mayor?
The very first change would be getting back to respecting public input when it comes to us by, whether it's by the hundreds, whether it's by the thousands, whether it's by a dozen people. It's really important that we get back to listening to residents when they come to us instead of dismissing them or ridiculing them in public, as I've seen happen over the last 4 years. Alternatively, with if we're talking about the actual vision for the kind of growth that I would like to see, because I'm not an anti-development guy. I would love to see Port Moody grow. One of the things that I would like to see is quality of life being taken first and considered first whenever we're looking at building projects. So usually the last, as we saw in the last 4 years, there's people that come in and they have issues with the vision that is presented. For example, over in Moody Center, where the tower height maximums were over doubled, folks come in and they say, well, look, this is going to make our community worse. There's going to be more traffic. There's going to be a lot of strain on the parks, especially Rocky Point Park, with no real potential for expansion. Or any expansion potentials are not being taken seriously by the current leadership. Here are my concerns with the project. And fair enough, that vision does have those downsides. But if you modify the vision and you say, look, we're going to be okay with one or two towers, maybe even three towers over by the SkyTrain, right beside the SkyTrain station, rather than the sort of wall that is envisioned for the almost four blocks away. We let the developers put up those towers, say, look, that's an appropriate place to put some density, and the rest of Moody Center needs to be redeveloped with economic development in mind. We're talking job space, research industries, post-secondary partnerships, health, we're talking green tech, light manufacturing, really attracting a couple good quality, medium-sized anchor tenants, and then moving forward, those anchor tenants would bring in with them, a whole slew of secondary businesses that then would bring in and attract the sort of service industries like restaurants or coffee shops. That's the kind of vision I'd love to have for Moody Center. Over the tracks there by the oceanfront project that's currently envisioned, up to 7,000 people, over 10 structures on that draft land use plan. Again, very little expansion to Rocky Point Park. The mayor was quoted in the CBC saying, we're getting a development much like Coal Harbor in Vancouver, where they respect their waterfront. And when I heard that, I thought, well, Coal Harbor is not the gold standard for Port Moody. And if it is, then we need to change things. And so, again, that's why I'm here. I'd love to see oceanfront developed. I think that's an excellent place for some luxury condos. Who would not want to be living right by the waterfront? That's probably going to be an incredible place to live. And if you want to live there, and especially if you want to develop there, you owe it to the community to expand one of our largest parks. As far as I'm concerned, the community should be having a significant addition to Rocky Point Park, which is already overcrowded, without these new up to 7,000 people plop next door. So pull those buildings back, tone down the tower heights. I think 38 stories is a little excessive for Port Moody. And then that'll give us the space to do a meaningful expansion to Rocky Point Park. So 20 years from now, you could go down to the waterfront, throw a Frisbee and just watch it fly instead of being cramped on this sort of little strip of park space, as the mayor described, is common in Cole Harbor.
There has been a development proposal for the Andres Wine site. It's kind of at the early stages, proposing a few towers that would have amenities, that would provide some employment and other services. Are you opposed to kind of that tower development outside of Newport Village, or how do you stand on those kind of proposals?
Well, each proposal brings something special to the table, and each proposal obviously brings some challenges with it. It's important to be considering these, you know, as they come up. But it's also, you know, I don't have a no tower kind of policy. That's not the vision that I have for Port Moody. Obviously, we're going to be putting in density, and part of that is growing up rather than growing out. Something like the Westport development there, you know, there are aspects of it that I like. There are aspects of it that I think are problematic. I would love to see that that extra SkyTrain station that we never got over there get built. If we're going to be serious about putting density there. And the wine site is only one of several industrial properties that you know, we constantly hear every so often that, you know, industry, heavy industry and that sort of thing is not here to stay. And every couple of years, there's a whole round of rumors that, you know, this guy or that guy is moving out of town as far as those industries are concerned. So number one, it's important to make sure that we replace industry with industry, because if we don't, then we will see what has been going on in Port Moody for the last couple decades, which is the deindustrialization, and the, you know, the tax burden gets pushed onto the residents, unlike in other municipalities like Poco, where they're actually developing and taking seriously the concept of economic development. We just hired an economic development person. And it's going to take a lot more than that to have that tax burden issue reversed.
You're probably familiar with the Hunter Marsden. He led a kind of a protest to City Hall about a green space development. Are you open?
Hunter Marsden, yes.
Marsden, yes. Did you support not developing that area, or would you change it, or how do you support kind of developments onto green space like that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I met Hunter a number of years ago when he first was starting the petition and the movement to save Burke Flynn Park, which is Port Moody's largest nature park, and it's currently at threat of being sliced in half with a road. I was very surprised to hear that folks on council within the current leadership were unwilling to take his movement seriously. And this movement is about, I believe there were like 2,200 petition signatures, the majority of which were from Port Moody. I have a real issue when we talk about that many people getting together around an issue and the leadership not taking it seriously. So we met a couple more times, and you know, I'd heard him out. I grew up near Burke Flynn Park. I ran those trails. I explored and got in touch with nature there. You know, I never had any formal training with nature or biology or anything like that, but I can connect with folks that are biologists, and we share this sort of love for nature that I guess I got just from by virtue of growing up near a place like Burke Flynn Park. And so to hear the idea and to really sort of look at it through an unbiased lens and see it for what it is, it's like we're subsidizing somebody else's development. If we keep this road on the books, we are subsidizing the development of the Ioco lands, which is the dumbest place in Port Moody to put density. It's as far as you can get from transit, so it's bound to be car dependent. And a city-led and city-commissioned engineering study has confirmed what many had thought. I thought this from the very beginning. I had a hunch. Even if you build the Park Road, half of the new cars are still going to end up choosing Iyoko Road. In order to build the road, you need the development. If you build the development, you ruin both the park and Iyoko Road. And the only person that wins in this scenario is the developer, who gets to walk away with a huge bag of cash. And so my vision for that area would be, first of all, to remove the road right-of-way, which is a motion I already put on the table, and it got rejected by the current leadership at City Hall. Second of all, make sure that we have absolutely no density, no additional density at the Iyoko lands. And third of all is to look at removing Iyoko Road from the major road network, because currently TransLink considers Iyoko Road as the designated thoroughfare for Anmore and Belcarra, which may have been fine back in the day. But times change, traffic levels change, and if Anmore and Belcarra want to continue to expand, I'm not willing to subsidize their growth by having Iyoko Road be less safe than it is today, which is already problematic.
Okay, let's talk about problematic traffic. I know the SkyTrain's here, and that does ease congestion, and we're all really excited about it. But what other things could we do in Port Moody to reduce the kind of congestion that we see that's just bottleneck for like an hour and a half every single day? Is there anything we could do to make that easier?
Yes, definitely. One of the things that has really bugged me for the last 4 years is that this sort of mantra is chanted again and again by the current leadership at City Hall, which is that, well, the majority of traffic isn't even from Port Moody, so A, there's nothing we can do about it, and B, that doesn't mean that we can't grow, so let's just keep adding all these astronomical population figures into our community plan. For example, that 4,000, up to 4,000 people over in Moody Center that's envisioned, or up to 7,000 currently envisioned for the Oceanfront site. For the Oceanfront site, the number that we got back is 40%. That one project stands to make our rush hours 40% worse. And when we take a look at these projects and these visions for 2041, again, this isn't just meaningless. We can't just keep pretending like these numbers and these sort of descriptions and everything we add into the official community plan, it is worth its weight in gold as far as setting a vision. That's the whole point of the community plan. And so when we look at a project like this, we have to be taking into consideration our existing traffic, you know, situation, and projecting for that to get worse. Because while it's true that SkyTrain, in and of itself, within, you know, in a vacuum, makes congestion better, what they don't talk about is that runaway overbuilding, like we're seeing in Coquitlam and further out east, is continuing to make the congestion situation worse for everybody. Because the folks that move into the high-rise developments, it's not like they don't own a car. Some of them don't, obviously, but the assumption underlying our master transportation plan here in Port Moody is that we can continue to grow and grow our city within that that target that we're already exceeding. But just take that target, which is aggressive on its own, 50,000 by 2041. We can get to there with zero new net car increases on the road. So net zero impact to the roads. You tell me, Stuart, if you think that that's a reasonable assumption to make. So we could add that much to our population and have net zero impact to the roads. You know, I think it's a good sort of aspiration to strive for. But if you're planning for tomorrow, that begins with looking for where you are at today. And we are not seeing the kind of no-car development anywhere in the Lower Mainland, let alone out here in the suburbs. And so step number one for traffic would be to revisit that plan and make sure that the sort of assumptions that it makes are grounded in reality rather than aspirations. Okay. And then another thing I'll tack onto there would be to immediately reinstate the transportation committee, which was axed in a year where Port Moody residents rated transportation as their top concern in the city.
something else that people don't talk about a lot is this kind of development, which I'm not, development has positive things, but one negative is affordability. People are finding it hard to find a place to live. Businesses are getting squeezed with increasing rents. Any ideas how to make Port Moody more affordable, not only for renters and low-income people, but for small businesses that have been here for decades, like the Share Store might have to pack up shop because the rents are going up. Any ideas about that?
Well, first of all, I definitely feel for the renters and the commercial renters in Port Moody. When I was looking for a campaign office, it was really distressing to see how many spaces are up for lease and freshly up for lease, especially in Moody Center. As we put things into the community plan, they have an immediate impact on land values. And so when you double or over double the tower height allotments in Moody Center, the market reacts accordingly. And what happened in Moody Center was that the rent started to skyrocket because, of course, the property taxes skyrocket. And so we have businesses that have been in the community for decades in some cases that are simply priced out and are forced to leave. And that's tragic. It's tragic for the business owner who's been putting their life into this for who knows how long. It's tragic for the community because they lose out on essential services. And, you know, you slowly see in some parts of the Lower Mainland the sort of heart and soul of the community being these independent businesses being replaced with McDonald's and Starbucks and Subway. And then, of course, it's tragic even for the landowners because they're looking for people to lease out to and they can't find anybody because the rents are so astronomically high. And then finally, it's unfair to the folks who will be coming here in the future because we've raised these land prices so much by adding these projects into the community plan before even asking if the community is really okay with it. Last election, we were debating 8 stories or 12 stories. That's a 4-story difference between the two visions of the two folks that were running for mayor. And 12 won, and somehow we're talking about 38 stories now. And something was lost in the mix in the last 4 years. Something happened where our leadership sort of lost their direction. And when you're talking going from 12 and now you're talking about adding 38-story towers into the city, I feel that folks need an election over something like that. This needs to be talked about more broadly than just a little amendment to the OCP. This needs to be talked about during the revision. Once every 5 years, we have a mandatory revision, and this is the time to talk about these sort of ideas. But now that these amendments have been made, the next revision, which is coming up just next year in 2019, really needs to be our quality of life revision, where we go back and look at all of these neighborhoods and we add in everything that is required to keep our quality of life second to none. And that includes park space, that includes community centers, that includes job space, and of course that includes affordability. One area in the city, Coronation Park is an example. It's one of the most affordable places to own today. And we really run the risk of gentrifying that neighborhood. This is probably the least controversial of the amendments there in Coronation Park. For my priorities in Coronation Park would be to A, get that neighborhood redeveloped as soon as possible because the families there have been sitting in limbo for too long. And then B, looking at these quality of life provisions like park space and affordability to make sure that what we do build ends up actually making the city better than it was before it was built.
Thank you so much for joining and spending a few minutes. I know you're really busy, but any councilor endorsements for this upcoming election?
As far as actually endorsing folks, I don't endorse people. I endorse ideas. I know a lot of councillors out there that have been council candidates that are working hard. Obviously, I personally, I'm going to be voting for Hunter. I'm going to be voting for Steve Milani. I'm going to be voting for Tasha Faye Evans. I'm going to be voting for Amy Lubick. And we'll see if I'll stick to those or if I'll be voting for a couple more based on the performances that I see at the all candidates meetings. And those are really important. I hope that you let your viewers know when those are so they could come in here for themselves instead of asking the likes of me.
Remind us when those meetings are.
We've got one coming up on Wednesday, and we've got one coming up on Thursday as well. The Thursday one is sort of the known as the sort of the biggest one. It's hosted by the Tri-City Chamber of Commerce over at City Hall at the Inlet Theater, and that starts at 7 p.m. So it's important if you're interested and if you're looking to hear from candidates firsthand, definitely come out to that. It's at City Hall, 7 p.m. And then the other one, the all-candidates meeting for the councillors, is the 10th, which is tomorrow, Wednesday, at 7 p.m. at Old Orchard. And then the one I am most excited about is on the 17th. That's the mayor debate. And that's happening, again, 7 p.m. at Old Orchard on the 17th. One-on-one there with Mike, and it should be a really fun night.
Okay, thank you so much. And any way for people to pitch in and help you out for your campaign?
Absolutely. I mean, pitching in is one thing, but we're kind of running towards the end here as far as spending is concerned anyway. So the number one way to help is to let your friends know. And to grab yourself a lawn sign. We can have it delivered and set up and taken down. It's only going to be up for about a week and a half. RobForMayor.ca is the place to go. I've got my platform. I've got my contact info and all that good stuff, social media, and a series of videos coming out shortly as well.
Thanks again, Rob, for doing this.
Absolutely. Thanks, Stuart, for inviting me.
We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you and bye for now.